This is Steve Sherlock on another Franklin Matters radio show, number 446 in the series. This session shares the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, January 26th. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. Some of the school committee and central office personnel were in the council chambers. The remainder of the committee was remote via conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. In the first segment, approximately 1 hour, it covers the opening of the meeting through the Horace Mann Middle School update. The second segment picks up from the high school program of studies update through to the end of the public session as they enter executive session, not to return to public meeting. That runs approximately 67 minutes. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda and to my notes. The meeting packet folder will hold the other documents released for this meeting. As we go to press, the superintendent's report is not yet updated to the folder. So let's listen to the segment of the school committee meeting of January 26, 2020.
Next on the agenda for guests and presentations, Mr. Hanna is here, principal of Franklin High School, to share with you an update related to the high school program of studies. So I am going to make Mr. Hanna a co-host so he can share his screen. And there are two items in your packet. One is kind of a general overview and framework of the program of studies. And then the other is the presentation that highlights some of the major updates for the next school year. And Josh, go ahead.
Dr. Hearn, I've shared my screen. Can everyone on the committee see the first slide? FHS
yes.
Program of studies? Excellent, thank you.
You can see it.
Thank you, and thank you for welcoming me to your meeting this evening from my home here. Just had a chance to celebrate my daughter's 13th birthday, so I'm feeling particularly old and a little overwhelmed. We'll see how the next 7 years go. Anyway, so I did want to say thank you to the students who kicked off the presentation with such class and passion. Mm-hmm. From the middle school, you can see it's a pleasure and easy to work at a high school when the students are so well prepared to take on our challenges. So thank you to my middle school colleagues for your presentation and for the work you've done preparing your students to succeed here at the high school. So this is a presentation regarding advancements and adjustments we've made to our program of studies. The program of studies is a rather large document that is a collection of the offerings that we have for our students at Franklin High School. Over 1,700 students, and we offer over 1,200 different classes, sections of classes. And across the next few slides, we'll be talking about some of the adjustments we made for this year, which, you know, with all that was going on, it might not have been a year where you wanted to make too many adjustments, as we certainly adjustments is a word we've been using quite a bit, right? Pivoting and adjusting and so on. But we still wanted to make sure we honored the tradition of examining. Oh, I have some people I'm going to be admitting in as we're talking here. Sorry. Into our offerings. I really feel like a high school program of studies is a view into what you are valuing in terms of the education you're providing. We make choices on courses that we decide to offer. And when we make the right choices, we engage our students at a high level and prepare them for the challenges of their next chapters. So let me see here. Okay, excellent. All of the things we're doing at Franklin High School, we're looking through a number of lenses. And the first lens we use is our core beliefs. This is the PANTHER acronym. And as you can see, words like passionate, nurturing, thoughtful, high-performing, responsible. We want to make sure that we're not making any decisions or interacting in any way, shape, or form without thinking about these words. And so on all of our meeting agendas, this is the top frame, making sure that this is the area that we've decided is important, and we're not going to take into consideration any type of interaction that doesn't align with these important core values, core beliefs of our school. In terms of academic expectations, which is, of course, when you're talking about a program of studies, are you sure that the courses you're offering are going to allow for students to collaborate and communicate? We want to make sure that there's creating, not just understanding and showing on a test, but what courses can we offer where things are actually being made? This idea of own learning, right? How can we make the experiences personalized so students can see themselves in the work and understand how it connects to them. We used to talk quite a bit in different departments I've worked in over the years about, you know, if you can't explain in one sentence how the lesson of your day is going to impact that individual student, then you shouldn't be teaching that lesson, or you need to make modifications to it. Students need to understand how their time with us is valuable to them. Obviously, practicing digital literacy, we've gotten really good at that. I'd like to just do a quick shout out to our teachers who last week we had a PD session. We talked about, although this has been a difficult year, what are some positive things? And overwhelmingly, their own digital practice and the improvements that they could comment on and the growth that they've made and the things that, like Becky mentioned in her presentation, I'm never going to teach the same way again. And that's not to say how we taught was bad, and we're not always going to teach this way, but we've learned different tools that will help us continue to advance the way we go about our education. And finally, thinking critically and solving problems. And that's always been the most important part of any education, right? Really getting down into how can this apply to solve the problems of our world, which we all know there are plenty of them. And it's our responsibility to create a strong, independent generation that's willing to take on those problems and make life better. Mm-hmm. And finally, connecting with our portrait of a graduate, this idea of creating confident, empathetic, these are words that are so critical to have, and it's our responsibility to make sure that adjustments we're making, whether it's be to the school handbook, or the program of studies, or the way in which we interact when we're talking with students, how can we make sure that these are critical skills that we can assess and then work with students so that by the time they're walking across our stage, and I was so excited to hear Akash talk about the idea of an outdoor graduation where we all know we want to see these skills in all of our students as they grab their diploma and celebrate a milestone in life. And when we have these done in such a nice way artistically and also thoughtfully, right? Like an empathetic and productive citizen. Well, we all know the importance of being productive, working hard, getting things done, but being empathetic is this part of understanding the variables that are around us. And how can we make sure that we're not just getting taskmasters at the end of our experience, but also people that can really understand the complexities of the world we live in. As our world, population-wise, is growing more and more every year, and the interactions around the world are occurring at a much higher level, empathy and understanding is one of the most important skills we're going to have to survive and succeed as a human race, never mind just as a successful, you know, employee. And so, to me, these are great words and phrases that will help us continue to reframe how we organize our school with the curriculum offerings. So just to give you a bit of a timeline on how this came about, we started by working in our principal's council, department heads, and Franklin High School reviewed what we previously had in our program of studies. And we wanted to make sure that what it had was representative of what we wanted it to be. We put a particular thought regarding cultural proficiency and making sure that the courses, the way they were written, who was being offered them, the prerequisites, et cetera, was in line with what we believed were important parts of, again, our core values and our learning expectations, this idea of a portrait of a graduate. Adjustments were proposed, and this all began in November. And then throughout December and into January, the adjustments were reviewed by Franklin High School department heads, administrators, and then eventually into the Franklin Public School administrators, Dr. Ahern and Dr. Edwards, Mr. Jajir, and all of the support that they provided for us with a lens on what might these adjustments have on an impact to get to this point where we're presenting these adjustments to you. And as we move into the month of February, students will be able to choose from this library of offerings and to build their own schedule, which is something we've really honored over the last year in the development of our hybrid model, is to make sure we weren't going to force students into particular classes, to make sure that we could get maybe a few more kids in school. We really understood that a high school program of studies allows for students to get connected with the most specific courses that they want because of their future. And so we've honored that schedule. And this program of studies talks a bit about that. So there's a few highlights I'd like to share with you and then give you an opportunity to ask questions or make comments on the document. I know you've seen the link. It's dozens of pages. and it wouldn't be appropriate to go through each page this evening, but I think a few highlights is a nice idea. One that came up pretty early on in the conversation is a course that's been in Franklin High School for a long time in the program of studies, which is titled Race in American Society. It just hasn't been running because students have chose not to sign up for it at high a level. As you know, when you get courses signed up for, you have to make decisions, are we going to run this course or not, based on the number of students who signed up for it. But we really worked with our guidance department and our social studies department to revamp a few of the descriptive pieces to the class and recruit some educators that we're excited about, who have connections with students we think are going to be excited about signing up for the course. I really encourage our counselors, when they're meeting with students, to pick selections to encourage them to, you know, consider taking this as an elective, as many elective courses have to be taken by students to earn the total number of graduation credits required. We want to make sure that we're taking time to say, hey, this is a course that might be valuable to you. We understand your background, etc. And so we're really committed to getting this course off the ground for next year. And we believe, particularly in the time we're living in, that it's an important course to have and to allow for students to kind of begin this study. If there's one thing we've learned in the last year, it's that discourse regarding race is something that our country needs to open its mind to continuing to learn about. And I think this course is going to give us a great opportunity for that. Similarly, down the road with our world language courses, they took time, and you could see the edits in the document, to not just focus on the grammar of a world language, but also get into the cultures that exist within, you know, the French-speaking community, the Spanish-speaking community, and to understand. And I think, you know, for anyone who's studied languages, you know, it's not just the language, it's the culture. And we, I think, as a world, again, I'll go back to the point I made earlier, as we're shrinking, it's important for us to have a high level of respect for the cultures that are around us. So those are a couple examples of changes we've made to the program of studies with this idea of inclusivity. I'm sorry, I skipped one. Increased cooperative offerings. Cooperative classes had in the past been courses that were offered to some of our specialized programs, and we would kind of isolate one or two courses within a department and say, this would be like cooperative art or cooperative phys ed or cooperative music. And what we've tried to do is eliminate those titles so as to allow for all of our classes to be cooperative. It shouldn't just be in one particular area. It should be our talented educators. Wherever you're coming from, we're going to create access points to the information that we have. And so adjustments along those lines as well over the course of the last few months. A change we made to PE pathways, made because we feel we want to own and honor the credits that we give out of our high school. And in the past, Franklin High School has offered PE credits in a number of pathways. One in traditional coursework that happens during the school day. Another is you can earn credit for participating in a school-sanctioned athletic team. And the third was exercising or participating in activity outside of Franklin High School. And we really feel like if we're going to say that we believe in social emotional well-being, then we want to provide the courses and allow for the students to practice them under our guidance during our school day and not be subbing out that work to outside agencies that will be difficult for us to monitor and totally understand to the level at which the students are participating. And it's not to say that you can't have successful interactions health-wise outside of school, but we really feel like we have a great team of educators, and we want to be able to provide increased offerings to our students to allow for them to earn their credits here, right here in the building. A couple of updates in terms of our the state seal of biliteracy. We're working very hard with Dr. Edwards and Laura Evans on continuing to provide access points for students to earn that, as you're now being credited by the state as having an understanding of both two languages. And you can earn that through coursework in many of our classes, including up into AP courses in the French and Spanish language in particular, but also for non-English speaking students who come in and learn English, and then they're able to pass tests to show their understanding of multiple languages. And it's a great credit to those students to be able to have that mastery. It certainly helps them in terms of their applications for advanced study. But in another way of showing our understanding and respect for a variety of skill sets. In terms of increased offerings, we're excited to bring in a new AP class, AP Microeconomics, and an additional class, which is a pathway to AP computer science. It's kind of like the introduction to AP computer science, and a new math class titled data science. And finally, to share a little bit of the work that Dr. Edwards has been doing regarding the social studies curriculum, we've revamped our ninth grade world history class to connect a lot of the work that typically had been done in eighth grade. And we've shrunk 2 years basically of world history into 1 year, much more thematic, skilled based. I know that people might say, oh, sorry about that. I just skipped it. I know some people might say, you know, how can you take 2 years of world history and condense it into one? And it's a misnomer that we studied all of world history to begin with. So it isn't as though there was this experience where everyone learned everything about the world. We're just streamlining it. And really, at this level, it's much more about skills. Human interaction is human interaction. And our emphasis is going to be on the important skills that exist within a history class, which we feel like this new program, which a lot of hard work's gone into this. I know Mr. McCarthy, our social studies department head, has a great vision for how this program is going to work. So excited about seeing that in place next year. Finally, our future work, and I love this phrase of windows and mirrors when it comes to curriculum design. We want to create windows where people can look out and see others and consider other perspectives, but we also want to make sure we have mirrors that allow for them and the students to see themselves. This type of own learning that we talked about earlier, making sure that we're always working to adjust our experiences so students are feeling connected with what it is that they're learning. So thank you. I tried to be concise with the presentation. I'm very enthusiastic about the changes we made to the program of studies, and I'm happy to answer any questions or address any comments that you have.
Sure, let's go through. Starting, Jen, any questions, comments?
No questions, just thank you for the presentation. It was informative and concise, and thank you for your leadership in a very trying year in a new district, and I think you've done an outstanding job. And thank you to the department heads that helped with this process, and the guidance department under the direction of our outstanding director, Heather McFay. So thank you.
Thanks, Jen. Tim?
I like what Jen said. Thank you.
Judy? Judy, unmute. I'll come back to Judy. MJ?
The others have already said everything. It was great. Thanks, Josh. Looking through the brochure, it was very interesting to me that the kids come in, they transfer into Franklin High, where they are actually able to get a class rank, which several years ago that wasn't the case.
Yeah, we're able to make adjustments along the way with that for sure.
Nicely done. Thank you.
Thanks, MJ. Elise?
Just echoing what Jen said too. Thank you, Josh. Great presentation. Very informative.
Denise?
Thank you very much, Josh. I really loved the windows and mirrors quote at the end. It really speaks to being empathetic, like you mentioned earlier, and is in line with our portrait of a graduate. This is so important. And thank you for auditing the courses and curriculum and making the inclusivity and equity adjustments as discussed. I look forward to hearing updates from you in the future on the status of those classes.
Thanks, Denise. I was going to echo that too. I love seeing the race in American society, the adjustments that you've made there, and really focusing on culture and world languages. That speaks to a lot of the concerns people had. And the other thing too is just when you look it over, as we do our budget presentation and we kind of let the community know in everything that's going on, when you look at the nature of the courses now that are being offered at the high school level, things like the new courses that you're offering, plus architectural design. I was looking at green engineering, bioengineering, robotics, things that never existed before, and so much technology-based too. So I think we need to sort of keep getting that message out that schools have changed so dramatically, and the kind of offerings, if our kids are going to be competitive out there, it's really important that we get that information out. But I wanted to thank you, Josh, also on behalf of the entire committee. Judy, were you going to say something?
I was, yes. Thank you.
Go ahead.
My question is, do you have on hand experienced professional teachers that are able to teach these new course offerings?
Yes, they're only offered with the support of teachers that are within departments that are know, that's how this process begins. Like, we say to department heads, are there new offerings that folks have been, you know, asking about or would like to bring forward? And so we wouldn't put together an offering without someone that's either trained or, you know, already have had this in their mind's eye.
Okay, good. I'm thinking of the money pod. Thank you.
You're welcome. I understand.
Thanks. Thanks, Judy. And again, just on behalf of everyone, Josh, thanks, you know, the presentation and all the hard work that you've done. I know when you came to Franklin, this wasn't yet what you had planned, but you've done a great job. So thank you. Keep up the good work, Josh. Thank you. And thank all your staff for us also. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you all. Have a good evening.
Sarah?
Thank you. And thanks, Josh. The final presentation for tonight is an update related to homework and the homework policy. So the homework policy was revised back in the summer to fall of 2017, and that was something that was underway when I started as superintendent in Franklin. And Joyce can talk a little bit more about the history over the past couple of years. But we are sharing an update related to homework tonight, and we will also have, this is kind of an interim update because I anticipate having a little bit more when we do district improvement plan goals later this year. There will be some follow-up, but wanted to abide by our school committee presentation schedule and give you an update related to homework. So I'm going to turn it over to Joyce. Joyce, are you going to share your screen?
If you would, that would be great. You have that, right? Or
it may take me a moment, so why don't you get started and I will.
All right, sounds good. So thanks for having me to talk about homework. I know it's been an ongoing topic for a number of years, and a number of you from the policy subcommittee, MJ in particular, were very involved with the development of the school committee policy a few years ago. And at that time, the policy really changed sort of the tone and tenor, I think, of the approach for the district in terms of homework. We referred to it kind of jokingly as a kinder, gentler approach to homework, and not quite as punitive, not taking away recess for incomplete homework from young, you know, for young children, et cetera. After the school committee adopted its new policy a few years ago, it took us a couple of years. There was a homework committee that met regularly twice a month for a couple of years and developed the homework practices and guidelines that would then accompany the homework policy. And that's how it would actually live in the schools. That brings us up to last year. And Sarah, you can advance that. That'd be great. Last year, pre-pandemic, our plan was to monitor the homework in the schools based on the new guidelines that went into effect, and be able to monitor, gather some data, and be able to really speak to the efficacy of the new practices, the new guidelines, and make any adjustments that might be needed along the way. So our plan had been to do some data gathering in the spring of 2020, and like so much of the spring of 2020, the best laid plans kind of went awry. And we didn't do any formal data gathering in the spring because people were just really working hard at being remote and trying to be in the moment. But our informal data, talking with teachers, following up with the homework committee members last year, indicated that, in fact, the guidelines were by and large being followed, and there seemed to be greater consistency pre-pandemic and during remote learning, some greater consistency, which was one of the goals, was more consistency across grades and schools. Fast forward to this year, homework's very different this year. There's a blending and a blurring of the lines between day and night. Students are assigned asynchronous work, independent work during class. They're assigned independent or asynchronous work, sometimes to finish in the evening. Sometimes it's work that they didn't get to during the day. Sometimes it's planned homework. But that blending and blurring of the lines between day and night and time on and time off and time in school and time out of school, or when you're remote 100% of the time, it just looks differently this year. So as a result, we don't really have a data gathering mechanism for all of our variety of cohorts and things this year in terms of homework. But Sarah, if you went to the next slide, What I can say is that in past years, we have heard complaints when homework has been an overload. We have heard that really have not heard complaints this year. We've not heard about real flagrant violations of the policy or the guidelines. We didn't want to survey people at this time because people are really overloaded. However, we do want to gather important feedback about homework. We think it's an important aspect just as part of our total comprehensive approach to curriculum and instruction. We will be doing some student focus groups next year. So rather than just sending out another survey, we really want to get in front of students and meet with them, socially distanced and masked, of course, or even virtually, but to be able to talk with students about their homework experiences. Yesterday during the JPCC meeting, we were able to gather some really good feedback from families, from parents who were there as leaders of their own PCCs from their schools, and we will be asking the principals to gather some data again in sort of a focus group methodology from their school councils with regard to homework. One thing that's been really important to all of us has been the homework free vacations, and that policy within our guidelines will continue. We put out notification and expected that to be in place for both Thanksgiving and for the winter break. And I have a tickler in my calendar for February 1st to send out a reminder for the February vacation. Again, for the homework free vacation, send out the reminder to staff K to 8 that is the expectation, that the vacation period is homework free. And at the high school, we've used terminology that says to the greatest extent possible, understanding that kids who take AP college level courses maybe can't take off the February and April vacation weeks in order to prepare for the exams, AP exams, which are administered in early May. So at this point, we're still expecting the homework-free vacations to continue. There had been overwhelming, fantastic support for that from teachers and from families as we implemented that in the recent past, the last couple of years. As Sarah noted, we will be doing a district improvement plan update again in the spring. We'll revisit this. The data that we do gather in February from school councils and from students can be a part of that presentation, certainly. But really our efforts at this point are moving away from homework because we now have the stability of an updated school committee policy and an updated set of guidelines for actual practice in the schools. Instead, we're really moving more into the grading reform efforts and making sure that we achieve some greater consistency of grading effort, largely secondary, I'm talking middle school and high school. That's where the work has been focused over the last couple of years and will continue. But we will need to, in the future years, start to wrap in a revision of the elementary report cards and grading practices as well. So that's future work. So that is where I sort of see this heading, and that we have tamed the homework beast for the moment. But I think it does bear careful watching over the next few months, and certainly as we transition back into perhaps a more typical year next year, to make sure that, again, those the problems that we were trying to fix had to do with both communication, consistency, and the sort of overwhelming quantity of meaningless work or busy work that was being assigned at all levels. And I think our policy and practices have come to show us that the work that's being assigned now is far more connected to curriculum. And in fact, I thought some of the parents were really eloquent yesterday in the JPCC group when they were talking about that their kids are getting less quote unquote homework because they're doing more independent and asynchronous work, and they'll do it at varying times of the day. But what they were saying about, and this was at the middle school, and it really, I think Becky and Craig's presentation really ties to these comments really nicely. Their parents were saying that they were just stunned at how little additional work the kids are getting, but that the work in class is deeper, that they're doing more in school, and that they're very impressed with the depth of the learning. And again, those parents were saying kudos to the teachers and administration. That was a middle school comment, and they said that really impressed with the deeper learning that is evident in the classrooms. And of course, what's new for us this year and last spring is that we actually have families in our classrooms now as the kids are learning at home. And that's a different window for families, and it's been a different adjustment for teachers as well. But we are really pleased to say that we feel like the kids are really getting high quality learning experiences in the classrooms, and that is really key towards the deeper understanding and the higher level thinking skills that we're looking for. Again, all lining up with Portrait of a Grad. And I certainly am happy to take any questions.
Sure. Let me just go through. See, committee. Jen, questions, comments? Nothing. Tim?
Thanks for keeping thinking about this, like during a year when it's really hard to make adjustments and learn anything about the new homework policies. But I'm glad we're still thinking about it. And I'm hoping, you know, that we at least use this as an opportunity to not go back to the way that things were previously when people were upset.
Thanks, Tim. Judy, anything? Okay. MJ?
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, Joyce, thank you. And I really appreciate that, you know, you did this presentation tonight, keeping homework, you know, up in front of everybody. And just very excited about the comments that you mentioned from yesterday, that, you know, the work that the kids are doing, they're, you know, delving deeper. And I, you know, it doesn't appear that, you know, there's time for, you know, the homework of yesteryear, so to speak, you know, just homework to be homework, which is very exciting. So thank you. It's been a long time coming. And again, I really do appreciate the update.
Sure.
Thanks, MJ. Elise?
Question. Thanks, Joyce.
Denise? All set? All set. And thank you so much, Joyce. This was very, very helpful. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay, Dr. Hearn.
Okay, I am not muted. thought for a second I was. So next on your agenda is a discussion action item. I wanted to ask the school committee to approve next year's school calendar in two iterations. The first is before you to set the first day, the last day, vacation periods and holidays, as well as two full professional development days. We would then bring a calendar back for you to consider with our half day professional development days and parent teacher conference days. That typically takes a few conversations with the administrative team as well as with the Franklin Educators Association. We'd like to take a little bit of time with that. But we do want to get some dates on people's radar screen for the 21-22 school year. So I am requesting that the school committee approve the 21-22 school calendar as discussed, pending further additional dates.
Okay. Is there a motion to recommend approval of the 2021-22 school calendar as discussed? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second? And we have a second. How about discussion, questions, comments before we vote? Anyone? Looks good. Okay. All right. Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. All those in favor of recommending the approval of the 2021-22 school calendar as discussed, roll call vote. Jen D'Angelo.
Yes.
Tim Keenan.
Yes.
Judith Pohn-Pfeffer.
Yes.
MJ Schofield.
Yes.
Elise Stokes.
Yes.
And Denise Spencer.
Yes.
And Ann Bergen. Yes. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Dr. Hearn.
The next item on the agenda is this meeting's reopening status update. So I've shared some of the health metrics with you. For Franklin, I am no longer seeing Norfolk County health metrics in the weekly Department of Public Health report, so I removed the county information. but Franklin and Massachusetts is listed there for you, both still being in the red for the last 2 weeks. We have a table for you related to 4 weeks of case counts in the Franklin Public Schools. We had a high of 31 individuals the week of January 9th, and last week 16 individuals. We had some higher rates of staff in quarantine due to self or to children. As you know, that does have an impact on us being able to fully staff our buildings, and we continue to, I think, struggle different buildings at different times, but continue to struggle and navigate kind of a coverage plan on a day-to-day basis, and whether or not it is a good idea to open, or whether or not we need to go remote in individual school buildings. In terms of other items to update you about, Mr. Kaufman is holding a family night for the Virtual Learning Academy families. Dr. Edwards will be joining, Kate Merton, a digital learning integrationist, will be there, and I think several VLA teachers will have some conversations with families, answer questions, and address concerns. Dr. Edwards has been working with the high school administration, in particular Assistant Principal Maria Weber, about putting together a student internship program whereby seniors in good standing can get paid internship work hours to participate as kind of educational supports within our elementary and maybe middle schools as well. And so some messaging has gone out to students and to families about that program. We think it's a wonderful opportunity for students who are interested in education to get a jump start on that and to build a career pipeline. The program is similar to the internship program that we have at the high school anyway, which is in quarter four, but this expands it to be earlier. Students would continue or will continue to complete graduation requirements in English and math in particular, but spend other hours of the school day supporting student learning in elementary schools later this winter and into the spring. And that is being sponsored by the Department of Ed. Mr. Jagir has been working with the technology department as well as the digital learning integrationists to clarify tech support. And so there is some, there's a new landing page on the technology website some new information available for people who are remote at home looking for tech support, teachers who are remote or teachers who are in the building. And who to seek out for what particular types of support. And our DLIs continue to provide support both to our staff as well as additional help to families. Food services, grab and go breakfast and lunch continue to be available behind Franklin High School, and all meals continue to be free for everyone through the end of June. And contactless pickup or delivery can be arranged if needed. A big thing in the area of personnel is kind of us keeping tabs and learning as much as we can about phase two of the vaccinations. There was a press conference, was it earlier this week or Friday? Or last?
Yesterday.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paula.
Feels like a while ago. A lot has happened. Things are moving. We don't have a ton of concrete information about vaccinations for educators at this time. I do think that information is going to be rapidly developing as the state gets into phase two. I do hope to have more information soon for both our staff as well as to share with the school committee about vaccinations for educators, but they are in phase two of the rollout. We have had some staff get vaccinated. They may qualify through some of their medical licenses, and we had school nurses get their first round of vaccinations within the past 2 weeks at the vaccine clinics held for first responders. We will be holding vaccine clinics for the first responders again for the second dose in a couple of weeks on two successive Wednesdays. I anticipate, I talked a little bit about pool testing in the superintendent's report. I anticipate having a lot more information by this time next week after the Friday webinar, and we have a better understanding. We learned on Friday a little bit more about the state's timeline, where they feel they'll be able to be up and running with pool testing during the week of February 8th. The following week after that is February vacation, and then we come back from February vacation. So we're thinking about how do we bring on board pool testing here. The next step is to formally apply with the department. They match districts with particular vendors based on geographic area, as well as the number of tests you anticipate that you anticipate using. And another thing that I would just share is that the Binax Now antigen tests have been further vetted for their accuracy in terms of identifying positive individuals from a pool who may be asymptomatic. And these antigen tests were initially approved for symptomatic individuals, and they have since done a study on asymptomatic individuals. And the Department of Public Health does feel confident that this is a good test to use as a reflex test with a positive pool, and is recommending it. So I wanted to just share that update. That was one of the frequently asked questions that came through the survey from families, was just on the accuracy of the Binax Now antigen test. Since we last met, kind of vetted the travel expectations with the policy subcommittee as part of the continual review of the COVID handbooks, and want to repeat and reiterate kind of the intent of the out-of-state travel order is that people are returning after potential exposure and getting tested and coming back to school. So we are asking that children of all ages before they return to school, after they return to Massachusetts, be tested for COVID with a PCR test. And if individuals have been COVID positive within the last 90 days, but beyond 10 days and are asymptomatic, they do not need to be tested or quarantined. They just need to bring proof that they had tested positive for COVID. Couple of things have been completed in terms of some of the selected issues that have been appearing on this list. So we have completed the information around tech support over the weekend. The 10 gig line was installed for internet. That was not one of the reasons why we had internet problems today. That was something out of our control and related to Verizon, and was affecting many, many users, I think all across the East, Eastern Seaboard. So that was not related to our upgraded upgraded line, but we are upgraded from 2 gigs to 10 gigs. We are still deploying air purifiers throughout the district. They're in our schools and in our classrooms, but the municipal building now has some air purifiers while the controls for the UVGI get set. And we are continuing to meet to provide support to K-1 families when remote, and support staff as well in their planning of hybrid and remote instruction. Happy to take any questions or comments that you have.
Sure, let me go through. We'll start with Jen. Anything, questions, comments, Jen?
No, I think you just mentioned at the end that you're still working on the K-1 situation.
Yeah, so I think right now how I would summarize that is that we're kind of focusing our efforts for K-1 on supporting families in the remote setting. There's a variety of things happening in order to kind of improve synchronous instruction while students are remote, as well as Joyce working with the committee Jen, you had mentioned last time about prioritizing, and we do have a process through our schools with teachers and counselors and administrators to, with criteria, identify students who are most in need of being in school 4 days a week. And so we do have, you know, kind of high needs students, kind of through that process, identified and prioritized to come in for in-person learning. So that is something that we are doing as well. You know, I think right now in terms of the prospect of bringing K and one full and in person, it's very difficult to do. The case counts continue to be actually quite high. I shared the numbers with you for the past 2 weeks, but we're already higher today than we were we already exceeded today in 2 days last week's numbers. So we're seeing a bit of an increase in our numbers. We are seeing many individuals continue to be in quarantine when they test positive, but we have had a number of close contacts identified. It's still continues to be touch and go in terms of sub coverage within our buildings. College students are returning back home. We had to put Parmenter into remote for several days in a row. And we continue to have a lot of concerns about fully staffing our buildings. And I think we would really be pretty precarious to bring more students into the building at this time. And I think that we would perhaps have a more unstable situation where we have more in-person and remote oscillations back and forth if we create too much pressure within our school buildings.
And then just one other thing was, I'm assuming the pool testing, you'll be providing like a full report on that later on.
Yeah, so my plan was to do, you know, there will be some interim information coming out, but at the next school committee meeting, give you a much more thorough report and update about pool testing plan.
Perfect, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I have one comment and then three requests. The comment is, it was disappointing to see the press conference yesterday, I guess it was, or read the news yesterday, to see that the educators have been bumped down in priority order. I know they're still phase two, but the fact that they've been bumped down, while at the same time there's increased push to try to get people or, you know, kids back into school full time, at the same time that numbers are rising dramatically with the virus, hugely disappointing and annoying and frustrating. And so that leads to the first request, like, is there something that we can do as a district, even if it's just to send a letter to the state and DESE or whoever, we, you know, to express the frustration that teachers have been bumped down in the priority order on the vaccines. We're asking them to do a lot, and it just seems like, you know, the path to them feeling more safe is vaccines are part of that path. So would love to see if there's something that we could do to express frustration in that change, because I know that change just came out of the news conference yesterday. So that's the first request. Second is, we have heard some comments about the, you know, the wear on teachers a lot, and what I feel like I don't know, and I'd like to understand better, is what really is the extent that the teachers in the different schools or the different levels are actually feeling unsafe in their work environment right now. I know some are, but I don't know if this is, and there's a range, I'm sure, as there would be in any workplace. Some feel safe, some don't feel safe. What I'd like to know is, what's the extent? Is it 50% are not feeling safe every single day that they're going in? Is it 75, 80%? So my second request, is there something we can do, some kind of a survey or some information gathering method through the principals or whatever to find out really what the extent is that the teachers are feeling unsafe. And the reason why I think it's important now is because the numbers are rising. We now have heard that there's a delay or a reprioritization for the vaccine. So I do think something has changed that would make it helpful to get that information. So that's the second request. And then the third request is related to something that I think could maybe ease some of the burden on individuals, individual educators, and it's related to the vaccine rollout when it happens. Is there something that the district can do or is planning to do so that the district employees and educators can get vaccinated without having to take on the burden of scheduling all that themselves? Like, is it something that can be brought to the schools or that the district can, you know, book at Gillette for everyone to go during a similar time? Like, what can the district do just to make that part of the process easier on the educators and at least take one more potential stress off of them?
Sure. I'm happy to jump in. Sorry, Tim, did I cut you off?
Nope, that was it.
Okay. So we echo the disappointment that came from the press conference, and you know, it is coming at a terrible time where there is pressure and expectations around more in-person learning. Cases are up, and completely echo everything that you have said, and I know that it's shared by educators across Franklin and across the Commonwealth. I do think that we could write a letter. We could advocate to the governor and other powers that be from the Franklin community. I do know that that some professional organizations have done something similar. The Massachusetts School Superintendents Association sent something out on Friday to the governor's office, just urging prioritization of educators in the pipeline for vaccines. I don't know if MASC has done anything, but that would be another advocacy route, would be to connect with MASC if they were looking to do something. But short of that, we absolutely, and I'd be happy to draft something up on behalf of the Franklin Public Schools and Franklin School Committee to send along to prioritize educators. In terms of the survey for teachers, that has been part of what my goals, and I've been researching some tools, and there are some surveys out there that are that you're able to tailor and ask some of your own questions. And so I think that that's something that we can get tabs on related to extent of feeling unsafe. And I do think that there's a range. You know, I think that there's a range across the district and a variety of reasons for that too. And then I think that it's in our interest too, as a district, to have to make it easier for educators to be vaccinated, not only to support their health and prioritize their health, but also just in terms of operating a school. I think having an orderly process to the vaccination rollout is going to help us kind of make sure that we can keep going, because there will be people who unfortunately may have some side effects that keep them out for a sick day, for however long that lasts, and you know, kind of making sure that appointments are able to be scheduled at times that work, because we do still have school from 7:30 or 8:30 till 2 or 3 o'clock, 2:45, 2:40 in the day. So we are working behind the scenes to talk with the health department in Franklin to understand what the plan is at the state level from DPH and the Department of Education, because it is our preference. And we've learned a lot from the first responder rollout. It would be our preference to have, you know, quite a bit of control over vaccine distribution. I don't have a lot of information at this point from the state as to how that vision is, but you know, even if we're not doing it in the Franklin gym, maybe there is a way to sort of book things at Gillette, as you say, or some other ways to kind of jump in and make it a bit more systematic.
Thank you.
All set, Tim?
Yeah, thanks.
Judy?
All set, thank you.
Okay, sure. MJ?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay, Elise?
Yeah, just a question, Sarah, about the role of the reopening task force. So is that role going to stay the same as it's been, which is pretty much monitoring with about 2 meetings per month? Or do you see that the role of the task force shifting going forward?
I see the role of the task force as at some point shifting. I think there is still a need to kind of monitor things in an ongoing way, but as the vaccine rolls out, as pool testing rolls out, there are new developments, and there is some forward planning that needs to be done as well, as we think about returning students to school, as we think about mitigating learning loss, and what types of summer programs might we be able to offer in Franklin in order to support children, and what does a transition back to school look like? So there is going to be a need to kind of shift that from a monitoring team to kind of a second round of planning, to kind of look forward. So we're took some feedback from the members of the reopening task force and are fashioning some next steps there.
Gotcha, thanks. One more. I know this is so difficult to predict now, but what are your preliminary thoughts about Virtual Learning Academy continuing next year for students who are medically involved or immunocompromised?
Yeah, so I think it's a great question, and I think it's one that is early, but one that we should and ought to be thinking about. And I guess some of this comes down to the vaccine and vaccinations for children and the time frame for that, which I think is going, from what I hear, and this is not insider information, this is from news articles more than kind of I haven't heard this on a call with DESE or DPH, but vaccines for children going into the fall, so there I think are going to be students who may very well need a remote option, and that we may find ourselves, or I think it's likely we'll find ourselves in a spot where we'll need to be planning for a smaller number of students, and this is just sort of preliminary thinking, probably with some criteria attached, rather than having it be parent choice entirely, some criteria attached for virtual learning, but it'd be a smaller cohort than a smaller group than what we currently have this year.
Okay, right, that makes sense.
I think we'll get more guidance and more information from the Department of Ed in terms of some of those kind of learning model expectations, but it's just some thinking at the current moment. I think some of this depends on vaccine rollout.
Right, I know it's so early, it's just like parents do think ahead that far, and especially with a kiddo who has that profile, it's a big worry. So thank you for answering, and we'll just keep on top of that. Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome.
Thanks, Elise. Denise?
All set.
Okay. I just wanted to say too, following up on what Tim said in terms of teachers being essential workers, and what I was gonna ask, and actually Denise and I talked a little bit before the meeting in terms of getting a letter out, just as Sarah was suggesting. I was going to ask the committee and Sarah, would it be more powerful to, in addition to you, if the committee sends a letter, drafts a letter, say through community relations, just this sense of urgency that, you know, the teachers can't be lumped into that second group, that they've got to, if we want to get the schools open, then that's got to be a priority. I didn't know what you felt about that. Would it make a difference if we as a committee also, you know, lent our voices to say, I know committees across the state are doing that. I didn't know how our committee felt, or if it would be redundant if we didn't need, you know, kind of a letter to the governor and to our state legislators. I don't know what people felt about that, if that was just redundant, if we did it as a committee to give that sense of urgency. I just didn't know what people felt about that. If anyone wanted to, would there be any benefit to doing that? I don't know what the committee feels about that. We could do our, we could do one from the Franklin School Committee.
I'd be happy to support that. I think the more the better.
Yeah.
Right?
I do. I don't know what, just another, you know, saying what this means, you know, I don't know. Anybody else?
No harm.
No harm, yeah. Denise?
It can't hurt.
Can't hurt, right? So maybe we could think to do that, just so we have another, just to convey, and just let people know, you know that we really, these are essential workers on the front line, just was just what Tim was saying. So, okay, thank you. That's why I just wanted to get that feedback. All set, Sarah. Any other comments from the committee before? I just want to see if there were any public comment. Any other, no committees. Is there anyone from the public, anything who wishes to comment? Does anyone see anything? Don't see anything. Okay,
nope.
Good. All right. Moving along then to information matters, budget subcommittee. We're going to be meeting on February 2nd at 4:30, budget subcommittee. Community relations, Denise.
Our meeting this Thursday at 3:00.
3:00, thanks. Policy, MJ? Oh, there she is.
She stepped away.
Yeah, she's right here. She's back. You're muted, MJ.
Sorry.
There you go. That's okay.
March 18th, we'll be meeting.
Okay. Sounds good. Facilities analysis, Elise.
Yeah. So our subcommittee has moved from stage one, information gathering, to stage two, evaluating options. We've decided to adjust the pace of our meeting schedule to meet once a week. Stage one had to take more time since we were relying on outside evaluation results from McKibben and KBA, and we are also facing many pandemic-related unknowns. At this point, we've fulfilled the policy requirements for a comprehensive closing study FDT, and we have all the information we need to move forward to detail and then evaluate options. After we've completed our evaluation of the options, we will compile all information and present our recommended option or options to the full school committee. We have two meetings scheduled before I report to you again. Our meeting this Thursday, January 28th, and then next Wednesday, February 3rd. So depending on what happens in those meetings, if we're able to complete our evaluation and reach a consensus, we may have a recommendation ready to present to you at a February school committee meeting, but I'll keep you posted.
Okay, thank you. Joint PCCs met yesterday. I just filled in for Judy, who had another civic obligation there. So just to reiterate, Joyce was great. She got feedback from every level relative to homework and what the lived experience was. And the feedback was great. Joyce, it was a great way to do it, to get all that feedback and then incorporate it. The Franklin Education Foundation, Pandora Carlucci, mentioned that May 4th, which is Horace Mann's birthday, I don't know how old he would be now at this point, but older than I am. So, and it would be on May 4th, and it's a day of fundraising to support the Franklin Education Foundation. And they gave out 17 grants last year, and they've extended the deadline this year for grants to June 30th of this year. And then she mentioned that the Interfaith Council, they have formulated a food security team. And they're partnering with local restaurants, and it's starting from the beginning of February, I think, through, I'm not sure, through April. If you want to check, a percentage of a number of restaurants are participating. So if you go to the restaurant or do takeout, whatever, they will give a percentage to the food pantry. So if you want to check that out, the Interfaith Council, it's called Project Envoy, and it's kind of a neat thing in our community. They're really going to try to deal with food insecurity. So. I think that's it. And I just wanted to say, with you, and Judy can attest to this, when you go to those PCC meetings and you hear all the stuff that they're continuing to do and all the enrichment activities they're providing, and they haven't given up, and they're going above and beyond to try to make sure that these kids have the end of the year celebrations and all kinds of events going on. So kudos to the PCCs and all the work that they're doing for our schools. And that's it from my report. And Substance Abuse Task Force is going to be meeting on February 23rd, right, Lucas? And School Wellness Advisory.
I can do that, just a quick update.
Sure.
We haven't had a meeting since we last had a school committee meeting, but our big news was the flyer went out today, which has information for the free fitness classes that we get through the YMCA for the Franklin Public School staff. And so we're so excited about that. We've been working really hard with all those great people at the YMCA. So you can check out what they have to offer and check back frequently because they do regularly add in new classes. And there's a lot of stuff in there. There's something for everybody. Our next SWAC meeting is February 9th.
Thank you. Okay. I think I covered all of the things. Okay. So how about new business, Dr. Hearn?
So new business, we will have a school highlight at the next meeting. We will have a status update, and I will bring you information on pool testing.
Okay. Consent agenda?
Consent agenda. I recommend approval of the minutes from the January 12th, 2021 school committee meeting as detailed. I recommend approval of the budget transfers as detailed. I recommend acceptance of a check for $2,324 from Readathon for in-house enrichment at Remington Middle School as detailed. And I recommend acceptance of a check for $2,327.97 from the Parmenter PCC for supplemental supplies as detailed.
Okay. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion, comments? All right. Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. Again, roll call vote. All those in favor accepting the consent agenda. Jen D'Angelo.
Me.
Tim Keenan.
Yes.
Judy.
Yes.
MJ.
Yes.
Elise.
Yes.
Denise. And Ann, yes. Okay. Motion carries. Consent agenda. All right. Then we look at payment of bills. They are in order. And payroll, Judy?
In order.
Okay. So now at this time, I would entertain a motion to adjourn from this regular meeting with the intent of going into executive session. I will read the purpose and executive session session pursuant to Mass General Law Section 30A-21A2 to conduct strategy session in preparation for negotiations with non-union personnel. Is there a motion to go into executive session?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thanks, Denise. Okay. Although now we have to have a vote on the motion to adjourn, and we do have to do roll call. Jen. Jen D'Angelo?
Yes.
Okay. Tim Keenan?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
And Elise?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes.
And Ann? Yes. So meeting is adjourned and we will not be coming back.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.